ready for two guys who can handle the truth.
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
But we can. Dave Palumbo, John Romano. RxMuscle.com presents Heavy Muscle Radio. Watch out, bro! This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
Welcome to another episode of Heavy Muscle Radio. My name's Dave Palumbo, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host and compatriot in crime, John Romano. John, the summer's over, the fall's upon us, and the final schedule has been set, and all the shows are pretty much coming to an end. We're coming to a close here. Can you believe the NPC Nationals is only 3 weeks away?
Yes, back down in Florida, and it's a much anticipated show. I can't believe that we're already here.
I don't know where this summer went. You know, it's funny because I remember us talking about you moving from Florida up to New York, and everyone saying it wasn't going to happen. And you've been here for a couple months, like 2 months already. So
yeah, 2 months. Exactly.
Well, before we get started tonight, I want to just put out a few special thank yous, because in this last month or so, we've really had a lot of sponsors come on board and show a lot of support for the RxMuscle.com website. And, you know, we've been working, what are we on, about 8 months now, 7 months?
Yeah.
And, you know, we put our blood, sweat, and tears into this site, and, you know, based on the fact that we believed that we were building something that people would really appreciate and grow to love, so to speak. And I think now the sponsors really get it. Number one, without ALR and Progenics, this radio programming wouldn't even be possible. So let's just give a special thank you to Scott Conley and Arthur L. Ray, who, by the way, is going to be, I think, coming on if not next week, but the week after that show, because people have been really, really pumping me to get this guy on. You know, he's probably one of our most popular guests aside from Conley.
Yeah, he is. He's very interesting. He's a very intense guy. And his company, when you stack up all the other supplements, companies, he makes some very, very interesting products.
Well, he's definitely not a copycatter.
No.
That's for sure. He has his own unique style with his own unique names, and you either love him or you hate him, but the people that love him really are loyal to that line of products, and they spend a lot of money on his products, and it's a testament to the fact that, you know, Arthur is a creative thinker, and he doesn't care what other people do. He has an agenda in his mind, and he helps the bodybuilders, I guess, get products that they normally wouldn't get from other companies.
Right, and products that very unique products, and he's got a his line of thinking as he goes about creating them, well, from delivery system to ingredients is very, very different and non-competitive, which makes it good for us, because he's the kind of sponsor we can have right alongside of somebody like Scott Connolly that's completely non-competitive and who are major supporters of our show.
Yeah, it's funny because Arthur really doesn't put out any protein supplements, and that's what Connolly does. So, I mean, exactly. They complement each other pretty well. Another really unique or innovative thinking company is one of our new sponsors, D-Mix, that has this new energy pump, which I know you're kind of like fascinated with. It looks like a little Banaca blast bottle, probably a little bigger than that, and you kind of like pump this stimulant rich formula into your mouth and then kind of like let it sit under your tongue, and you kind of get some instant energy out of this. Now, you know, I'm not a big believer in stimulants, John, as you know, but I like this pump because I could tell you why. I could do two spritzes and it's probably like maybe an eighth of a cup of coffee, and it's not going to get me wired out of my mind, but it'll help me to stay alert when I'm doing like writing or if I'm going to the gym or something like that. And I like the fact that it has amino acids for alertness, right. And it has a lot of vitamins and not only vitamins, but mostly fruit and vegetable extracts, which, you know, I'm real big on.
Yes, absolutely. And it tastes good. That's a big thing.
I like the coffee one. The fruit punch, I'm not that thrilled, but I love the coffee, and the mint are really good.
Yeah, the mint one is really good, and the coffee one is good. I like the mint one because it really makes your breath smell good.
I told you, it reminds me of taking like a Banaca blast spray. You know?
And I think it's going to really catch on. I think this is the kind of product our community is going to really embrace because it's portable. You know, it's in your pocket or it's in your gym bag. When you want it, you pop it, you spray it in your mouth, and boom, you're done. It's not swallowing a pill or mixing a shake or anything complicated like that. If you're on the go, you can do it while you're driving, well, anywhere. And the stuff works. It tastes good. It's good for you. It's got great ingredients, and you really notice that stimulant effect almost immediately.
Well, the guy who actually invented it or put it out, I should say, they were big on selling mixed drinks like vodka and stuff like
Hypnotic.
That. Hypnotic
is one of the most popular drinks ever made.
I know. So these guys know what the public likes. So I expect this to be a big product and to catch on pretty regularly.
I do too.
I also want to thank once again Brutal Alchemy, which we can never stop thanking them, because this $1,000 Battle of the Biceps is going to be huge on Friday, November 13th.
Yeah.
I got to just stop at this point and ask Jeff, the producer, how's the training going for that one?
I want to apologize to Mike already for his loss.
Yeah, and you're pretty confident. He's very confident, John.
Very, very confident, especially going up next to a guy with like 25-inch arms. Yeah, he's very confident.
You know, girls say this too. It's not about the size, it's how you use it, right, John?
That's right. So that's what they always tell me.
Now, so how many, what have you been, and I understand you have a different strategy than Mike's been doing. Mike's been actually doing like the 70s, he told me, and repping them out for a tremendous amount of reps. You've been using the hundreds, is that correct?
I've been going heavier than the 80s for sure, yeah. Because I figured that if I back down, I'm just going to end up getting more reps out of that anyway. But, you know, you have to train more for endurance. It's not just the strength competition.
So. Sure. Girls say that too.
How many reps are you able to do with the hundreds?
The hundreds is still just around 5 or 6, but I do them strict.
Right.
You know, like right. If I heaved it up, I could do sloppy reps, but that's not going to help me. So
now, how does Jimmy the Bull feel about your? I know he's going to start helping you out with some of your training methodologies. Is he in favor of this, doing the heavier weight stuff?
Yeah, because I think that you know, he thinks he's going to recruit more fibers, and then the endurance is just going to come from that. But I've yet to work out with him, but we have to schedule it, because he said that after I do his workout, I'm not going to train the same. So, you know, we'll have to see.
All right. Well, we're supposed to get him in the gym, I think, with you maybe this coming week. So we'll have to see what the Jimmy the Bull secrets of bicep success are, and see if they're going to help you in this thing. I got to talk to Mike too. I haven't really called him up and seen how he's doing, but he told me, I think the last I heard, he was doing like 15 or 16 reps with the 80. So I think it's going to be a contest. It's going to be on.
And you know, that once their adrenaline gets pumping, and you know, they're in there, they're not even going to notice if they rupture a tendon. Just going to keep going until death.
That's right. Well, $1,000 is a lot of money for these guys. You know, that's not chump change out there.
Not anymore. No.
And we have the Brutal Alchemy to thank for that, obviously.
Completely.
Now, also, because we mentioned earlier that the NPC Nationals are coming up. Well, BSN is our official sponsor of all our coverage of the 2009 NPC Nationals that are going to take place in Hollywood, Florida, and we start. Started off our Nationals coverage with a Trey Brewer arm training video, which got an enormous amount of hits online, John. I was very, very happy, and people seem to be real pleased with the way Trey Brewer looks.
Yeah, well, props to you, first of all, for doing a great job putting that together and going down there and filming him and everything. It was a great video, very entertaining. And, you know, as you know, Dave, I've been long Trey Brewer for since he won the Excalibur. I've always believed in that guy. Not that I want to sound like somebody else, but I always have believed in him. And I believe that, you know, when he puts the right combination of factors together and hits the nail on the head, he's going to come in looking like the champion he is. And I bet you he's going to be hard to beat. And just looking at that video, it looks like he is well on his way to doing that.
Well, look, I think he's going to be the best he can be this year, which is going to be big, hard and freaky, and that's what he's got to be. He can't try to play to someone else's strengths. His strength is being big, ripped, and freaky. That's his look. That's what sells, and I think he's going to bring that because he's already got it. You know, he's probably about, in my mind, about a week and a half away from being in his best shape ever. So I'm sure, you know, however Hani's, you know, honing in his contest prep, he'll be perfect on the day of the show. But this guy's going to bring it, you know, and the guy's only 24 years old. You know, don't be surprised if he wins it this year. If not, you know, I see him being a pro no later than next year.
Yeah, he's Trey Brewer has a bright future ahead of him in the pros. It's just a matter of him getting that, you know, getting a pro card and getting in there and getting it right. And hopefully Hani is, you know, concentrating on him this year, and he's going to do that for him.
Yeah, I'm sure he will. And remember, all the NPC Nationals coverage will be brought to you by BSN, and we're going to have a lot of it in the coming weeks. So yeah. I'm excited. I got a lot of good videos to put up and a lot of previews. So stay tuned. Also, I will be putting up the haunted house or the haunted nightmare video of the Whack Pack, or as I like to call it, the Whack Pack nightmare.
Right.
Video will be going up probably Monday morning or Monday afternoon, and we had a lot of good time with that. Good times at that, and it'll be up just in time for Halloween, which I know you'll be out doing some trick-or-treating with Max. We'll be up in the NPC New England Championships, where Jay Cutler will be guest posing. That's Steve Weinberger's new show up in Boston, Mass. And we'll be up there next weekend.
Yeah, that Nightmare Whack Pack video is probably going to be one of the most anticipated videos you've ever put up, Dave. I've been getting emails and private messages all from all over the world asking about what this is about, what's it going to be, when's it going to be up. And that teaser we gave them last week has been driving these people crazy.
Well, I don't know if it's going to be any kind of ground-shaking movie or anything like that, but it might get people to smile a few times. And
especially at the end.
Yeah. And that's all we aim to do is entertain at this point.
Right.
So I think it'll be successful.
We are your one-stop entertainment shop.
Right. Now, this past weekend, we just covered the a couple bodybuilding shows around the country. We had the NPC Northwestern up in Michigan. We had the NPC Texas State down in Dallas, Texas there. Or actually, I think it was in Houston, Texas, in Aaron Singerman's hometown there. I actually believe, I think Amy, his girlfriend, competed and did pretty well down there as well.
Well, actually, Dave, you know, like the guy, the show who won, he has a mustache. Don't know.
Paul Frisk was the one who won the men's overall. Amy Nichols, I'm looking at on our results here at rxmuscle.com, won the fitness. Did you know that?
No.
She dominated, you know, because I gave her a new routine, you know, just go up and down and spin. And she won.
Well, let's congratulate her for that.
Definitely.
And it was a great
good
show down there.
Amy.
And it was a big show, too. There was like 200 people in the show, yeah, from what, wow, I understand. So we got some good coverage down there. We also got another couple around. Diana Cadeau's show was down in Miami, Florida. Dexter Jackson guest posted that. I had some paparazzi pictures up yesterday, thanks to Ali Constantino, John, your little assistant.
Yes.
And we have another show up, too. I'm still waiting to put up the Women's World Amateur Championships, John. I have all the pictures. I don't have the placings yet and the competitor list, but we have a lot of stuff to put up. That RX Muscle Contest Gallery is just reaming with new coverage every single week. We didn't even go anywhere, John, and we covered four shows this weekend.
Yeah, that's the power of our network, or the great correspondents that we have all over the country, all over the world for that matter, because
right,
we do have international shows,
sure,
too. You know, the loyalty to RX Muscle is great because the community is fed by the community itself, which is a great thing. And I'm really happy that we're able to get this amount of coverage up and give all of these great bodybuilders who work so hard getting in shape and training and, you know, getting ready for these shows, that give them at least some outlet to be seen so that they can, at the very least, go to their computer and show their friends that this is what they looked like on contest day.
Yeah, and we have a lot of those pictures up. I'll tell you something. And we, you know, I'm going to be busy these next couple weeks. So are you, John. This week, you're off this coming weekend, but I'll be up at the, like I said, the NPC New England's. The weekend after, we'll be in New Jersey at Maz's show, the NPC East Coast. Then I'm rumored to hear that Robbie Lopez is making a comeback. Did you
Whoa,
know that?
Whoa, that's going to be fun. I love Robbie Lopez. We got to get him, you know, we got to get him on the show. He is the funniest guy.
Yeah, no, he's good.
I mean, I keep thinking of that Plasmosis commercial he did for King Kamala.
You got to ask him about that.
That was the funniest thing I have seen in a long time. But, you know, Dave, off is a relative term, because I am going to be hard at work in the studio, doing the finishing touches on our video studio, so that when you come back the following week, we'll actually be able to shoot in there.
We'll be going live, as Jimmy likes to say.
Going live.
Well, the weekend after the NPC East Coast is going to be the NPC Eastern USA Championships. That's Steve Weinberger's show at Tribeca Performing Arts Center. As you know, that's a huge show every year.
Yes, it is.
And that's the prelude to the Nationals, which will be following up the next weekend. So you'll have a lot of last-minute people going down there trying to qualify, make some names for themselves, show off to the head judge, Jim Mannion, what they look like the week before the Nationals, which is kind of like the crowning event on the 2009 calendar season. Of course, and there's always the December 5th NPC Excalibur in California. That's John Lindsay's show. That's the last show of the year.
Right.
So, you know, we got a lot of work ahead of us and a lot of good content to put up on RX Muscle. And, I just want to thank all our supporters and all the people that patronize the website and are contribute in such a positive way.
And our global correspondents that work so hard bringing you this coverage.
Yeah, now we have a couple of news items, John, I want to talk about before we get to the show.
It's time for the news on Heavy Muscle Radio.
There was a report I got that was put out by the government, okay, that recommends that the that they're saying that the school lunch program, you know, that the kids eat in school. You know, you have a son, Max, 10 years old. He probably might participate in some of that. They said that school lunches are falling short on carbs. Did you get this report?
Falling short on carbs?
Yep, yep. They're saying that recent proposed new standards, according to grade levels, kindergarten through 5, 6 through 8, and 9 through 12, here are the recommendations. They want them to increase to 2.5 to 5 servings of fresh fruit for lunch and breakfast, at least 5 servings of fruit for breakfast, that is. And they want to offer another, they want the kids to have another 2.5 servings of vegetables for lunch, and they also want to make sure that they increase to 13 servings of grains for lunch and 7 to 10 servings of grains for breakfast.
What's a serving, a gram?
I don't know, but all I'm saying is that they're recommending that kids eat more carbohydrates and less protein and fats.
They eat tons of carbohydrates already.
No, this is I showed this the report to Scott Conley, and he almost threw up.
Oh my god!
I can't even repeat what he wrote to me in the email. That's how the vile what he said was. Because wow. You know, it's just pathetic that the government is still trying to push grain on kids.
Well, they have to push grain. They subsidize it.
It's unbelievable, though.
It's insane. It's absolute insanity.
We know that this is what causes heart disease, and this is what causes all the maladies.
Diabetes and obesity and all of these problems.
So you got these freaking fat kids whose parents don't know anything because they've never been educated. They read this report, then they're like, oh, Junior has to lose, you know, 50 pounds. Let's give him some freaking cereal so he can get some more grains in him.
Right.
And the kid gets fatter.
Well, the Surgeon General's obese, so that must mean it's okay.
Did you see the pictures people put up after we suggested that Scott Conley be Surgeon General? They put a picture of Conley with his ripped abs and that big fat lady. the typical problem with the United States government and how they go about doing things. This would never happen in another country like this. Never. It would never happen. Because you know what? C. Everett Koop was a fat bastard, too.
He wasn't that bad.
Yeah, he wasn't in good shape.
He looked like a pedophile is what his problem was.
But he was actually smart. Didn't they fire him because they didn't like what he was saying?
I think it was that Abe Lincoln beard that made him look pedophilic. He was reasonable, though, that guy.
They should make Pat Barrett the Surgeon General. I mean, come on. They got to have people with progressive thinking here.
From the Gonk Show? I
mean, no, Pat Barrett, our doctor we got.
Oh, that Dr. B.
Or what about what about Norm Foss?
Norm Foss would be great.
He'd be a great Surgeon General.
Scott Connolly would be the best.
Yeah, he'd be, but they couldn't control him.
Yeah, because he has the people's health is the foremost thing in his mind.
Not policy.
And not subsidizing the corn growers and the refiners.
Right. You know that we could switch, okay? We could switch and make we can get rid of all the freaking, send the corn over to the starving people in Ethiopia.
Right.
Let's increase the dairy production in this country so we can have more whey protein available.
Make ethanol out of the freaking corn.
Instead of us having to go to China to get the freaking whey. They don't even have fucking cows in there. How are we getting whey from China? Did you ever figure that out?
That's a good question, because I wonder about a lot of the ingredients we get from China.
How the freak do we get whey protein from China when there's no freaking cows
there?
Well,
they import the milk and then they do separate it.
Why can't we do it here? We have tons of dairy farming here. Do you know that I used to train this guy in Mexico? They were very wealthy dairy distributors there. You know what they do with the whey protein there?
They throw it out.
Yeah. Because they don't know what it is. They make cheese and they throw the extra out.
This government pays farmers not to raise cows. They pay them not to farm. They pay them not to produce. That's because we have too much. When you're talking about a product like whey that is so expensive now because of its process and its scarcity, we have so much of it here at our disposal, and we're not using it, and we're turning around and recommending that our kids eat more fucking carbs.
That's right. Can you believe it? Do you know that before they started using whey protein, obviously, they were throwing it away here, too?
Yes.
Now that we use actually so much whey that we're throwing the cheese away pretty much because we don't know what to do with it because we were using so much whey, especially now since Starbucks puts whey protein in some of their coffee drinks they have there, and Nestle's got involved with the whole putting a little whey protein in their chocolate bars to make them sound like they're healthy.
Right.
You know, whey is a high commodity item. I don't know why we just don't concentrate on producing more of it here.
What do they do with the milk solids now. They can't possibly have that big a demand for cheese unless they're sending it to
They probably send
Russia
it overseas. Yeah, they send it overseas. But they should send the fucking corn overseas or make gasoline out of it.
So yeah, make what I said. Make ethanol.
I would take all of it and make gasoline out of it. We wouldn't have to freaking be over in Iraq.
Run all of those government vehicles and city buses on ethanol.
Right, right. And we wouldn't ever have to worry about the freaking people over there in Iraq. We can get the fuck out of there.
Yeah. Well, you know what? It's just if you spend any time watching the news, it's depressing. I watch Fox News a lot because, you know, they're as soon as a news agency gets exiled from the White House, that's my favorite kind of news station. And you know, you got Glenn Beck on there, and you got you know, a lot of the you know, voices of reason who are taking apart the political process here and showing us where these travesties are and the lies and the misinformation that we're fed on a daily basis. It's just the entire government needs to be cleaned out, dismantled, and start over again, and to knock off this waste and this retarded spending in areas we don't need to spend it, and concentrate on America, the health and well-being of our people, and our ongoing progress to promote health and well-being, and forget all this other nonsense.
Well, you know that if we weren't over there in Iraq spending all that money on a war, we'd be able to feed the whole world 15 times over with what we're spending there.
Well, we have to be over there fighting a war so we could use up all the war supplies so the factories here can make it and make money for the government officials that own stock in those companies.
Nah, that's not what it is. I think what it is that we're over there fighting for oil, for our rights to oil, because oil is king right now. And if we would just concentrate, look, we're the smartest people that ever ruled the earth, okay? You think that we could come up with an alternative energy source by now that would be as efficient as oil, and we wouldn't have to fight over the oil anymore. You know we can do that. If we spent 10% of what we spend on war, okay, and being over there in Iraq, we would solve the energy crisis, and we wouldn't have to be over there. And we could tell these guys over there to take their oil and shove it up their freaking ass.
We could do that right now, but war is profitable.
Nah, I don't believe that.
It is. You ever hear of a company called Halliburton?
Yeah, I know, but I don't necessarily think that's the reason. I think they're really over there fighting over
Halliburton?
Yeah, what's his name? The vice president.
Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Okay, and who got the information that we had weapons of mass destruction in Iraq?
Dick Cheney.
Yeah, exactly. So connect the dots.
Well, I still think we're over there because of the oil. But
how much oil are we getting out of Iraq?
It's the whole region over there. We want to control that region because
my gas is too expensive. I cannot drive.
Don't they have gas in Colombia, Diego?
We make it from the corn. I put it in the gas tank and it go.
I thought you guys make it from the gas, methane gases that are released from the manure you guys put on the crops.
From fermented tortoise shit.
Tortoise shit. Yeah, so those tortoises, the big ones, really they take huge dumps. Did you know that, John?
Yeah, I've heard that.
It's in my house. I know.
I haven't watched, but I've heard it. I know somebody watches.
Don't you smear that on your skin to clear up acne over there, Diego?
I do it to give my first coat when I step on stage to show Mr. Sean how a back looks.
Well, you know, John, everyone's always asking me airports. They like my airport stories.
Seriously.
So I didn't travel anywhere this weekend, so I really don't have one. But, you know, I had mentioned, I think, 2 weeks ago, last week on the show, that I was utterly disgusted when I saw someone shaving their face in the sink. Remember we were talking about that?
Yes, yes.
And then I was even more disgusted when I saw someone blowing their nose into the sink in Kennedy Airport.
The snot rocket.
Or LaGuardia Airport, I should say. Well, one of our loyal listeners sent me something that might be as disgusting as the blowing your nose in the sink.
Okay. I love our loyal listeners.
This was in LAX. It happened. And he went to the bathroom, I guess. And, you know, he was sitting in the stall. And he hears this, like, clicking sound, he said, when he was in the stall. Right, coming from the stall next to him. Now, he thought it was his iPod originally. He turned off the iPod. And then he realized that's not what it was. It was the guy next to him clipping his toenails. He had bare feet. It could have been Rob Smalley for all we know. Biggie Smalls. Clipping his toenails in the bathroom and letting the fucking clippings fall onto the floor.
Dave, sometimes you got to do it, Dave.
First of all, would you put your feet on the floor of one of those urinals?
Never in a million years. You know what? One time I had a
I got to stop you for a second, John. Think about how desperate you got to be to take your shoes off in an airport bathroom stall and clip your toenails right then and there. First of all, how the fuck did he get the clipper on the plane with him? Isn't that considered a weapon?
Yeah, I think it is. I had a change one time in the airport stall, and I stood on top of my shoes.
Me too, but did you clip your toenails first?
Hell no.
All right.
I wouldn't even think of bending over.
I never heard of this stuff. I don't know where these people
come up with this shit.
And you're not going to tell me that the guy had a date and he was worried about the girl checking out his toenails, because I'm not buying that one.
He probably had a hangnail or some shit. I don't know.
Hangnail? He clipped every toe, the guy said.
Oh, my God.
And that's LAX. LAX, they're usually a little more sophisticated.
Well, LA is an interesting place. So, the people are different out there.
Unbelievable.
In a good way. But it wouldn't surprise me that if you were going to name a city in which you would find somebody clipping their toenails in America, I would guess L.A.
Would you really?
Yeah.
I would probably say New York again.
Nah, I would guess L.A.
Yeah, because they walk around with those flip-flops on there, so they probably have easy access to their toes.
Birkenstocks.
Wear Birkenstocks.
What are those?
The five-finger shoes the Fingerman was wearing?
Right. Fingerman wears those. He's an L.A. guy.
Nah, he's I think he's in Maryland. Yeah. But he could be an L.A.
guy.
Yeah, he could definitely be in there.
Yeah.
I did a consultation with someone who came to my house the other day, and he actually looked like Fingerman a little, and then he started telling me about the fasts he does, and I really thought it might have been Fingerman, and I just didn't recognize him, but it wasn't. It was a guy I wrote a diet for, but he was into this. People that are into fasting, they feel good on the stuff.
Yeah.
It's probably not bad for you if you don't do it like for 80 days like Fingerman did it. it's probably not bad to give your digestive system a rest.
Growing up, one of my father's colleagues was a physician who owned we back then we called it a fat farm, but it was a retreat in Hyde Park, New York. It was just north of here, about an hour and a half or so. And it was a really nice estate at a nice kind of like old colonial manor house that they converted into sort of like a hotel retreat kind of place. And they went there to fast. You went there to fast for a week.
Because you're not very functional while you're fasting.
No, you're dead. And you'd go there and fast, and then at the end of the week, they'd slowly reintroduce, foods. They had things like blended salads and fruit juicers, and they got you going on juices and salads, right. And then eventually, before you left, you were eating solid food again. But people would come up there frequently. I mean, there were celebrities that used to come up there. I met Dick Gregory up there a couple of times.
Yeah. The guy who made that 400-pound Walter Hudson guy lose weight.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And they would go up there to fast.
That's a pretty good idea, to open one of those places. It doesn't cost you very much in food. That's
it doesn't
cost
you anything in food.
Very little in the way of anything. All you got to do is give these people a nice bed to lay in for the fucking week.
Yeah, they made a fortune up there while it lasted.
I remember my cousins. They were always very heavy when we were growing up. They used to always go to fat camp.
Fat camp.
Now,
I went to fat camp.
You went to fat camp too?
I went to fat camp.
How do you convince a kid to go to fat camp? That's what I always wondered. It kind of sounds almost like a punishment, really.
But actually, when you think about it, I was traumatized the first year I went to camp because I was like 8 or 9 years old and I was fat, and back then nobody was fat, just me. All of Long Island, I was fat.
Were you getting wedgies and stuff like that?
I was getting tortured. It was Woodbury Country Club right over here, Jericho Turnpike.
Wow.
And so when I went to fat camp, it was like, hey, everybody looks just like me. I mean, I was actually skinny in fat camp. I was like having things.
What do they give you to eat in fat camp?
They put you on a diet.
The grains. They give you probably
carbs. A lot of carbs. Mac and cheese.
They just give you smaller
portions. Exactly. Smaller portion control.
Which is the worst thing. They don't even have a good... We should open a good fat camp where we actually feed people the right foods. But we got to charge a lot of fucking money, because if I'm going to deal with fat people all day and I'm going to have to educate them, I'm getting compensated for this. It's not going to be any act of charity here.
No way, man.
It's going to be strictly for profit. But when these kids leave after 8 weeks, they're going to fucking know how to eat the rest of their lives.
And they're going
to
be in good shape. And they're going to be cured of this retarded illness that America's pushing on them.
We got to find some place upstate New York that's cheap. We can get some land.
Nothing's cheap upstate New York.
Well, maybe I know people that have some land. Yeah, what we'll do is we'll go all the way upstate where like Sean is from, Poughkeepsie area. There's got to be some like
expensive woodland up there.
Yeah, well, we'll rent a place for like a week and we'll get all the freaking fat kids and then we'll get a... We'll only take 20 of the top fat kids, but it's going to cost them like 20 grand each.
Yeah.
And
we'll spend... Cater to the rich parents.
6 weeks they got with us, and we're going to teach them how to eat.
Train and
have a good time.
Talk to girls.
Yeah, well, we're definitely going to have a good time. That's part of the festivities.
Absolutely.
And we're going to make videos, and we're going to... And at the end of this 6 weeks, you're going to see that these kids, the whole life is going to be changed. We're going to have so many people wanting to come to the next camp that we're going to have to...
Right.
We're going to have to branch out across the country, I'm telling you. And I'm going to raise the price to $40,000 for the next camp.
Right. Imagine if we had gotten Nick the Stick when he was like 12.
Yeah, well, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about. I mean, I was fat, but it wasn't like a fat fuck like you. You know what I mean? Like, fucking eating everything in fucking sight, you know? I mean, at least I'm getting laid. It's different.
That's right. We're getting Nick laid now, so we did a pretty good job.
I know, right?
I helped him lose 100 pounds, and now he's getting laid. I mean, who's better than us?
He owes it all to us.
He should be paying us to work for us.
Right. Oh, I learned that I have to chew my vitamins now, so everything's great.
Oh boy, you know, John, switching from fat camper over to the IFBB. I don't know if you can make that jump, but
it's a tough one.
It's a tough jump. But this meant some new rule changes for the calendar year 2010.
None of which I understand. The first one I don't understand.
You don't understand them?
The doubling, I don't understand.
Right, what they're doing is in the pro ranks, they are no longer going to have four rounds, from what I understand.
I thought they weren't judging the posing round. I mean, the routine.
Right. Correct.
Right. So how do they, what's the doubling the score? And then sometimes they don't double it.
The way they're going to do it is the pre-judging will be one score, 50%. The final pose down will be 50%. So they're combining round one and two, and they're taking away round three. So there's really only like a round one and round two. One will be the pre-judging, one will be the night show. Okay? So the pre-judging, whatever you get for that score will be 50% of your score, and whatever you get for the finals will be 50% of your score.
Now, what's that case where they don't double it?
Or they don't double what?
If you read that first paragraph.
I'm not reading. I'm talking about this. I'm in the second paragraph already.
Oh, but you're always ahead of me. you always pass me before I understand.
I will read you the rule that you're talking about. In bodybuilding, at the end of the prejudging, one score will be awarded and the score will not be doubled. So it's one round. That's what I'm saying.
It will not be doubled.
No. Well, because, right. For example, assuming a panel of nine judges, after discards, if the remaining scores are all first place votes, the athletes will be awarded a prejudging score of 5. Normally, they would double that to 10 two rounds. It's right, only
right,
one
right,
round.
Right, okay. Now
you got
makes
it?
Sense.
So the prejudging is 50% of your score. The finals is the other 50% of your score. The 50% is based on the whatever comparisons are done in the prejudging, and at the night show, they're done in the comparisons again. Now, the interesting part is that not everyone gets into a final prejudging and into the evening finals comparisons. It's right. Only usually the top 5 or 6. So in essence, those people won't even really receive a score. They'll only have one score. They won't be scored. You understand?
Yes.
The evening shows. But it really doesn't matter anyway at that point. So their placing will be determined basically only on that one score.
So it's good. They're giving them a second look on the night show.
It's good, because this way, if you come
really
looking
good.
Terrible at the night show, it's going to cost you 50% of your score.
Sure.
So you're going to have to really look your best for both rounds.
And
which has never really been done and followed before, I think.
No, and the routine does not count.
Although this year at the Olympia, if you look, I mean, Dexter was up by 8 points and Branch Warren beat him. So obviously they did score what happened at night. And right.
But it's not the posing routine.
No, the posing routine won't count as anything. They're going to still do it.
Right.
But it will not be scored, except if there's going to be a best poser award given,
right.
Which they should make mandatory for all these shows. Now, obviously, otherwise, why have a posing routine?
Because Kai Greene will win it every time.
No, he won't. Because sometimes, you know, Melvin and you have all these other guys.
Yeah.
Or why don't you have a top three for posing round?
I wish they could go, but like when we have...
Instead of giving 10 grand to the winner of the posing round, why not give 7 grand or 6 grand and give 3,000 to second place and 1,000 to third place?
Why don't they bring back the best body part?
Well, I mean,
I used to love that.
Right,
best legs,
now
best
it takes,
back,
now
best...
it takes too long to do these shows. You know?
No, you just award them.
Yeah, it's too
you
long.
Give them $1,000.
Yeah, I like the idea of a top three for the posing round.
I love how you always dismiss my ideas.
Yeah. But... think about it. It's going to take 10 years to give out 18 different awards on stage.
You don't have to give out 18. You have to give out 3.
Nah, well, I mean, I guess you could have it. I mean, they give the most muscular award at the Arnold.
You give out best legs, best arms, best back, best chest.
Well,
boom.
That Gustavo will win them all, won't he?
Best fucking calves, John.
Derek Anthony will be back in action next week, from what I hear. Now, another new rule change, John, is they're getting rid of the 45-second mandatory routine, where they do that black suit.
Thank God. For the fitness.
And
figure.
They're getting... For figure.
Figure.
No, for fitness. Excuse me, you're confusing me.
They confuse me. They're all the same.
No, fitness
figure.
Has a routine. Figure does not.
I know.
So they're getting rid of the 45-second mandatory routine, where they do the... in the black suit with the required movements.
I kind of like the black suit.
And they're getting rid of the one-piece swimsuit round. So now they're only going to have the two-piece, and they'll have that'll be 50% of your score, and the other 50% of the score will be the routine. Now, the black suit routine was ridiculous. People used to leave when they would do that.
It was the stupidest thing I've ever seen.
You can't even shoot it for the site because
they blend it into the curtain.
I know. So they finally did that. That's going to cut down on the time that these shows are going to take as well. All in favor of that. Now, in figure, the promoter may, with the approval of the IFEB League, hold a Masters figure pro division if they want to. That's women 35.
I hope they do.
Well, that's women 35 and over. Now, the reason I'm against it is because it doesn't mean anything.
It doesn't mean anything.
You can't qualify for the Miss Figure Olympia by winning the Masters figure.
Yeah, but it entices more people to compete.
Who cares? This is the pros, man. You got to stand up there with the other pros. Yeah. Unless you're given, I mean, it makes the promoter have to have more prize money available. Wouldn't you rather see that prize money go to the women bodybuilders or put more in the kitty for the other open figure?
Yeah, but I kind of like seeing all those MILFs up there.
Well, if you're going to do that, then you should make the winner qualify for the Olympia or something
all right,
like that.
That makes sense.
First of all, 35 and over is not Masters anymore.
No, they should have it like 50 and over.
It should be 40, 45 and over.
It should be like 45, 50. Did you see that Miss 50 America? What was it called? Miss 50 America? Miss 50
girls.
Bikini, whatever?
I think it was Miss 50 Naked or something like that.
No, they were having swimsuits on. They were very tiny swimsuits.
Yeah, they were hot.
They were hot as hell.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were all at least 50 years old.
I know. That's at least
gives you hope.
I was going to say that's
gives
good
me hope.
News for the future. That you know, you're when I'm 70 and my wife is 50. You know, she'll look good.
Yeah, exactly.
Whereas I should say, in my case, when I'm 50 and she's 44.
Yeah, you better correct yourself there.
Anyway, well, you're already almost 50, so what are you? One more year?
I'm going to be 49 next week.
That's right. What's the date of that birth?
29th. Hey.
Wow. November 29th.
October 29th.
I mean, October 29th. Oh, yeah. You're almost born on
Halloween.
Halloween, yeah. That's a good birthday, that would be. Although, would you get cheated if you were born on Halloween?
No.
No?
Yeah, I kind of wished I wanted to. I missed it by, 3 days.
I always liked, though, the separating the birthdays from the holidays, because you don't want to... Sometimes you get those combination gifts. My ex-wife was born on December 23rd, and she got gypped her whole life,
Who gets a Halloween gift?
Yeah, but it's like... You know, as a kid, you got to space your holidays, because Halloween is kind of like a holiday in the sense that your parents give you a little more freedom
to
eat candy and kind of run around like a lunatic with a, you don't want to combine that with a birthday. It's almost like overwhelming. It's too much. You're getting cheated in some sense of being allowed some sort of freedom in this.
Well, my mom used to throw me these great costume Halloween birthday parties. They were awesome.
Yeah.
The whole class would come. And
I guess that's cool. Yeah,
they were great.
What's Max going as for Halloween?
He got this mask. He conned me into buying him this freaking latex mask that costs like $60. That
$60. What the hell does the mask do?
I bitched and complained about it the whole time. He begged and pleaded. I finally gave in.
Wow, you're a sucker.
I know. And he got it, and it fits to his face. He looks like a gremlin from a movie. I mean, it's almost freaky looking to look at him. He's got this one of those Rastafarian hats, with the wool cat with the dreadlocks hanging out. He also has a wig too. I don't know which he's going to wear, but he put that on the other night and he turned around and it freaked me out. I mean, he looks like a little troll.
Well, he's only about 4 feet tall.
I know, but the face looks like an old man or something. It's really weird looking, and because it's latex and it sticks to his face, it moves with his face.
It's like the curious case of Benjamin Buttons.
It's bizarre.
Aging backwards.
Exactly. It's exactly what it looks like. But it's got some blood and some scars. And
I'm sure we'll get plenty of pictures of Max's Halloween jaunts around the neighborhood here.
Max even makes a cameo appearance in the soon to be released.
Yeah, I knew. I wasn't going to release or leak that little surprise. But yeah, Max is in the Halloween Nightmare. So
very briefly.
Well, he's got a couple. He's got two cameos, actually.
So. Oh, that's right.
Remember?
It's great.
Yeah. Well, I think people are going to like it. Like I said, I'm not ruining the surprise. Other than that, I think we have a great show. We have Leon Brown, who's I've known for, I don't even know how many years. I know him for at least 20 years, and he's been around the industry for 50, John. 50. This guy's been competing for 50 freaking years. He's known Arnold. He's known Franco. He's hung out with those guys. He's lived on both coasts, and he's back tonight to give us all the stories and to tell us what he's got ready for the future, because I hear he's getting on stage again.
Yeah, he is. And Leon's been one of those fixtures in bodybuilding that just kind of remind you kind of one of those guys where you think, God, he's still around? And you go, yeah, he's still around. He's still competing.
A lot of people don't know who he is, and I think they're going to get a real kick out of Leon and some of his stories. We also have Tony Doherty from Down Under. So we're going to get all the good stories about what's going on down there. When Ronnie Coleman was down there for 3 weeks, he's got plans for the 2010 Australian Grand Prix coming up, and he's going to tell us what happened with that bodybuilder who died at the show a couple weeks ago that they had back there. So there's a lot of excitement coming on when we get back from the break. Right now, let's give our sponsors some time to shine.
All right.
We'll be back in two.
See ya.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit ALRIndustries.com today. When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
When the world crumbles around you, will you be ready to fight back? Brutal Alchemy Performance Nutrition's unique line of supplements will help you win the war in the gym. Ancient Strength is a unique blend of 3 creatine esters which will infuse you with the ancient strength needed for the battle at hand. Isolation is a pure whey protein isolate that provides 26 grams of protein in every 29 gram scoop. Attack NO2 is Brutal Alchemy's nitric oxide booster that will increase your pumps and performance. After your battle in the gym, it's time for Onslaught, Brutal Alchemy's comprehensive post-workout drink, providing everything you need to suffuse your muscles, joints, and body with the components to heal, grow stronger, and return to the fray. And when it's time to conquer in the bedroom, you'll need Forged Steel, Brutal Alchemy's male enhancement product. Lead the charge to BrutalAlchemy.com to obtain the essential elements of your brutal transformation. Brutal Alchemy. It's better to be a member of the Horde than to be destroyed by it. German American Technologies. Compete harder with GATT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet Fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. GATT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder. TeamGAT.com.
Get in D-Mix. That's D-Mix, the world's first energy pump that combines the most essential nutritional elements for overall health with efficiency. Cool and easy to use. D-Mix is the most powerful and unique multivitamin, antioxidant, energy formula on the market. D-Mix is a nutritional wonder that lasts up to 4 days. D-Mix is available in 3 delicious flavors: coffee, mint, and punch. Each flavor is designed to be taken on its own or added to other beverages. D-Mix. Don't drink. Just pump. Healthy energy.
Who are the Iron Sirens? The heroes
Rose, Susie Curry, Adela Garcia, Jenny Lynn, Crystal Richardson, who are the Dark Divas, Gina Aliotti as Diva X, Jen Gates as Shade, Liza Kamstra as Black Lotus, Sonia Gonzalez as Raptress, and their story is told only in Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens is a one-of-a-kind, limited-edition comic book series and is the brainchild of J.M. Mannion. Order your copy of Iron Sirens today before they're gone. Visit IronSirensComics.com. That's IronSirensComics.com to get your copy of Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise. Up-to-the-minute news and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com. Heavy Muscle Radio.
Hey, this is the game, Triple H from the WWE. You're listening to Heavy Muscle Radio with John Romano and Dave Palumbo.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by ALR Industries. Visit ALRIndustries.com.
It's my distinct pleasure to welcome a man who's competed for over 50 years in the sport of bodybuilding. He knew Joe Weider, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Franco Colombo. He was in Pumping Iron, yet very little is known about our next guest. The guy I'm talking about, Mr. Leon Brown. What's up, Leon?
Not much. How you doing?
All right, Leon, talk to me a little bit about how you got into bodybuilding, because you've been lifting for over 50 years. That might be a feat that you're the only one who's actually ever accomplished, because I don't think anyone's competed in five decades. How did you originally get started in the sport of bodybuilding?
After high school, and we was in high school as a freshman, I started training with weights. Then a friend of mine gave me a magazine, a 1962 Muscle Builder. Then I started reading it and looking. Then I seen this guy's routine, and I followed his routine. And then I started getting bit, you know, started growing. Then I found, like I tell my wife, I found the first 4 years I found Steve Reese's diet to a T.
So you were an athlete in high school. You started working out. Then you found a muscle builder magazine. You followed Steve Reeves' routine. Is that correct?
His diet routine. Yeah. And for 4 years straight. And my mother and my sisters wonder why I don't eat candy or drink soda or eat white bread. They wonder what happened to me. They didn't understand.
What was Steve Reeves' diet? Give us an example of what he had you eating there.
In the morning for breakfast, I had whole wheat bread with honey. Scramble eggs, honey, whole wheat bread, honey, orange juice, and some piece of fruit.
How many eggs did you eat in the morning?
I ate six.
Oh, wow. So that's like my diet. Okay. What was the next meal? Like, what were you eating? Chicken and rice all day long, too?
No, back then it was like tuna or chicken, yeah. Then I was still in high school.
Did your family think you were crazy? Did your family think you were nuts?
They thought I was nuts. The way I was eating, because my grandma, she used to cook fried chicken and all that stuff.
Right.
And all the stuff I used to like, I never ate, you know, for about a couple years. And they thought something was wrong with me. He used to ask my mother, was I sick?
Wow. And how much were you putting on muscle during this time?
Yeah. Everything I did was muscle. Because I was always lean.
How much weight did you gain that first year you started eating?
In 9 months, I gained about almost 30 pounds.
Wow. Holy mackerel. Wow.
And for nice time in high school, I used to get a half a loaf of Arnold's whole wheat bread and make peanut butter sandwiches and drink a quart of milk for lunch with that.
So you needed a lot of protein back then, huh?
And plus, I was taking, at that time, they only had Hoffman's tablets.
Right.
Protein tablets. I used to eat half a can in between my classes, the chocolate tablets.
Oh yeah, they were like candies. Yeah. Those things, right?
And then in gym class, I used to fool around in a chin-up bar in the gym class, and the gym teacher used to see me do chin-ups all the time. Then one day I had put a guy around my waist. He weighed about 120 pounds, and I did reps with him.
You did chin-up reps with a guy holding on around your waist
back then? Yeah.
Wow, you had a big back though.
So the guy, the coach called me over and said, what are you doing? He says, get over here, Brown. Sit up here with me. And he let me run the class with the gymnastics, you know, the jumping jacks and the push-ups and the calisthenics.
So you were like the gym teacher, huh?
Yeah, he was the gym teacher. Then after that, there was no gyms on Staten Island.
Right. So where'd you train?
So this guy, guy from Staten Island named Vinny Reno, he used to train at the old Mid-City gym on 42nd Street.
Good gym. That's a good gym, yeah.
It was good back in those days, yeah.
So you would go into the city?
They didn't have a lot of women in the gyms.
Would you go into the city and train at that gym? Or
I would go like twice a week there, yeah. And train the rest of the time at home.
Uh-huh. What'd you lift at home?
I had a bench I made out of milk boxes and a board I made out of moves my incline.
Yeah, you had a little board with an incline there?
Yeah, I made.
Oh, you made it?
And then for the squat rack, you know the pipes in the street with Con Edison used to use back
right.
in the day?
Sure.
I took two of them and made a squat rack out of them.
Our taxpayers at tax dollars at work, yeah.
And then my friend Vinny said I should go in a contest. I said, what's a contest? He told me, yeah, you should try it.
What year was that in?
1966.
Wow, I wasn't even born yet.
I was 6 years old.
Was that Eastern America?
It was Teenage Eastern America at Brooklyn Academy of Music.
Your first show, you took what place? Second place?
I came second place and won Best Back and Best Abs.
Wow.
And could have won Most Muscular, but I was scared. I did five poses and walked off the stage.
Oh, really? What was your first show? Did you even know how to pose?
That was my show, yeah.
Wow.
Did you
and
even...
Then after that, with the Miss New York City, we just the man, they had no teenage division. So I won the Most Muscular Man in Miss New York City.
As an open guy?
As open, yeah.
Wow.
Wow. So now, Leon, eventually you became known as Arnold Schwarzenegger's training partner. How did you first meet Arnold?
The first week I was in California, I was walking down Santa Monica Beach with my friend, and he was playing chess with Artie Zeller.
We used to take pictures for Arnold, yeah.
And he says, who's that guy with the big arms? I didn't know Arnold. It's from a picture. I seen him from a picture on Muscle Developer, Muscle Builder magazine. I said, that's Arnold. You know when you get excited, you see somebody? So he heard me call his name, and he called me over. And then we started talking. Artie Zeller asked me where I trained in the city, because Artie Zeller's from back here.
Right.
And I said, Mid-City, he knows the same people, like the owner of Mid-City. He knows Abe Goldberg and Bruno Sammartino and Freddie Ortiz and all those guys.
You had a good bunch of guys to train in Mid-City back in the day, huh?
And I was a teenager then, and those guys, it was Freddie Ortiz, Harold Poole, Harry Scott, Bruno Sammartino. And I met Reg Park's son there at one time. His son was just come visit when he was 16 years old. He came to visit Mid-City, and I met him there.
Now, let me just get this right. You're out in California, Venice, talking to Arnold, and you're still a teenager?
I just turned 20.
Wow. What possessed you to go out to California? That takes guts.
First, I was like, that was 1969. I was winning all these shows over here, you know, East Coast, Eastern America, and all that. So every time you open a muscle book, it says California guys. Back in those days, it was everything about California. There's a California there. So I told my friends, so we got to go out there, see what's going on out there. And that was crazy. You know, I didn't know no better. So it was February 24th, 1969. It was a snowstorm here. So we just hopped on a plane and went. And we didn't know where we was.
That's great.
I said, just take us to Muscle Beach.
I said,
this is 2 o'clock in the morning. The cab dropped us, put our suitcases on, dropped us right at Muscle Beach. And we was in the middle of Muscle Beach, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Where'd you stay that night?
Then up the top of the hill, we was by the beach, top of the hill, there was a motel there. Next to a Rand company,
yeah.
And we stayed there.
Oh, wow. That's funny. Now,
and then we was walking around. The next day, a couple of days later, this is before I met Arnold, we was walking down Pacific Coast Avenue, and so a guy pulls up in his Volkswagen. He said, look like these guys train. He says, look like you guys train at Young Horse. I said, yeah, we're Morse. He says, there's a great gym down the way. I'll drop you over there and you check it out. That was Gold's Gym.
So that's how you found gold, huh?
That was on Pacific Avenue.
Yeah, when the 1006 Pacific.
Right.
The original one. And then when I walked in there, Joe Gold was playing cards with, Wayne Coleman. He changed his name to Billy Graham.
Uh-huh.
And George Friend, he was a shot putter in the Olympics. They was playing pinochle or something at the desk.
For money.
He told me told me to go and look around the gym. So I went around the gym, and so this guy was following us around the gym. My friend and I just biting me and bite. So I said, the gym was good. I never seen a gym like that. And everybody was training hard, and this guy keep following me. And I said, look, boy, look at this bench, look at this dumbbells. Guy pulls his pants down and starts flexing his legs in front of me. So I said, boy, who's this guy? I said, this guy must be a nut. I don't know the guy from Adam. It was the first time he was in Go's gym. He pulls his pants down and starts flexing his legs. And so we keep walking. I didn't pay him no attention. So we walk back to the desk. So Joe goes, see that guy? He just wanted to miss the LA. He thinks he's the best ever in my gym, this and that. He said, Mr. Surf Festival is coming up. If you get in shape, contact Shape for that and beat him, I'll give you a lifelong membership. Because he said he's an A, you know what I mean.
He didn't like him.
He was an asshole, yeah.
Yeah, so that's what he said. So, okay.
Who was it?
Art Peacock.
Wow.
So I went, 3 weeks later, I was in contact shape. I was in shape already, but I put the finishing touches, so I went to the surf festival. I won the whole show.
At 20 years old?
Yeah, and plus it was no class. It was like 25 guys in the show, and 1 to 5 was no weight class or height class or nothing. And who I beat in it was Paul Hill, Jim Morris, Dave Johns, Tyrone Young,
wow,
and Joe Adrian. They was all competing.
Wow. You got a free lifetime membership after that?
Yeah. And then...
Are they still honoring it to this day?
Oh, no. This was Joe Gold.
It was Joe's lifetime,
yeah,
not Leon's.
Joe's, yeah. And then the judges was... Bill Pearl was the head judge. It was Larry Scott, Bill Pearl, Dave Draper, Don Peters, and...
Wow, yeah, that's cool.
Don Holwood, they were the judges.
Wow.
So I said to my friend, look, see, they don't play no favoritism. They don't even know me. And all these guys train out there.
True. Now, when you came, you know, when Joe Gold was still alive in recent times, when you would come out there, would he still remember that contest?
Oh, yeah. Joe caused me and my friend the Eastside Kids.
Yeah.
He had a name for everybody, Joe.
Yeah.
Now, go ahead.
And then we met like all the guys out there. We got an apartment right a block away from Venice Beach. And all the guys we hanged out with, mostly guys from Philadelphia, Jersey, and New York, was all that was our crowd.
Right.
I mean, you know, after the gym, I mean.
Right. Who were those guys?
Most of them was nobody builders. They're just guys from, you know, the East.
Gotcha. Now, how did you actually start training with Arnold? We know how you met him, but how did you actually start becoming his training partner?
So after I met him, you know, the first day I met him, he asked me when, that was a Saturday, so Sunday morning, he said, where you live? I said, I live 15 Horizon Avenue in Venice. So next morning, 9 o'clock, somebody's banging on the door, and I said, Bud, woke us up. I said, Bud, who's that? I said, we don't know nobody. Who could be knocking on the door that early in the morning? It was Otto. I said, come on, get up, let's go.
You remembered where you lived?
Yeah. He asked me where I live. I said, 15 Horizon Avenue in Venice.
Wow.
Because that's like, you know where the pit is?
Yeah.
It's like a half a block from the pit.
Half a block, right.
Yeah. Okay. So he came and knocked on your door to get you?
Yeah. He said, come on, let's go. Then we started hanging out. The combo came about like 6 months later.
So you were actually there before Franco was there,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah.
So what were your workouts like?
It was just like we would do chest and back in the morning and legs in the evening one day. We would do every body part 6 days a week.
Wow.
You trained every body part 6 days a week?
Yeah.
Holy crap. Who was stronger, you or Arnold?
Certain exercise, he was stronger.
Were you guys pretty much equal, or you know, some of you stronger, some him stronger?
Yeah, some certain exercises.
What was your best? What were your best lifts?
And plus, before that, another show thing. When I went to the Mr. Venice Beach show, I won that too.
Oh, you won the what year was that? Same year.
Yeah. So, but this happened at the Venice Beach show 2 weeks before that. They had a powerlifting show there.
Right.
So my friend says, why don't you do the powerlifting show? And I was all ripped up. I was only 177 pounds. Ripped, getting ready for the Mr. Venice Beach. He said, why don't you enter it? I said, no, I never deadlift in my life. It was deadlift, squat, and bench press. So I entered. I did a 365 bench, a 455 squat, and a 600 deadlift.
Wow. Holy mackerel.
At 177.
Did you win?
I was training for a bodybuilding show too, and I wasn't even doing. I did squats and benches, but I never deadlift before. That's the first time I ever did deadlift.
Wow. And you deadlifted 600 pounds?
Yeah. My back was always strong.
Did Arnold deadlift with you?
No, Arnold did, once in a while he deadlift. He used to do a lot of high pitch when he first rolled back.
Yeah. So when you guys were training together, you guys trained your entire body every day, three times a week. Oh, 3 times a week.
Like chest
and back in the morning.
Chest and back and legs and Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Oh my God!
And Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, the other parts.
The arms and shoulders. How long would those workouts take?
About at least two hours for the first one, and the other one about an hour and a half.
So you're training 3.5 hours a day.
No, that was
it was split up.
So you spend all day in the gym?
No, we did the gym from 10 to 12 and come back like 6 o'clock at night.
What did you do in between? What were you guys doing during the day?
I used to hang out on the beach.
How'd you guys make money back then, Leon?
Back then after that, I got a job at UCLA. Then that's where I only could train once with Arnold.
Oh.
I worked, a friend of mine, Lou Alcindor?
Sure.
Yeah, sure.
The guy, my friend Bart, knew him from Staten Island because he used to come over here when he was a teenager, play basketball at Crown Hill Center, and Bart knew him from there.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Yeah. Yeah, so he got us a job there.
Doing what?
We was night janitors from 5 o'clock in the afternoon to 1 o'clock in the morning. But I used to train with Arnold one time that time then. I had to change my workout.
So you train in the morning with him?
Yeah, from 10 to 12, then I'd get ready to go to work at like 3 o'clock and leave to go to work.
Now, you know, you were doing pretty well cleaning up at all the shows out there. Tell us about the time you beat Franco Colombo, because a lot of people don't know that you actually were on stage with this guy.
Yeah, at the Miss International.
Tell us how that came about.
They were saying they had a Miss International. Eddie Silvestri was running the show in Mexico, in Tijuana. And so Franco was in it, Mike Katz was in it, Dave Dupree, I think Ed Giuliani.
Wow, stacked.
And Franco was in my class, and he just came from Europe, and nobody never beat him before.
Till he met Leon Brown.
And he wouldn't talk to me for a week in the gym.
Oh, he was mad at you that you beat him?
Yeah, because, you know, when he first came in that week, him and Arnold would never talk to nobody but Arnold, even in the gym.
Really?
They would speak enjoyment together. Arnold speaks Italian too, and German. Franco speaks German too.
Franco did not speak English.
No, at that time, no.
Right?
How did you communicate with him?
Through Arnold.
Arnold was a translator. That would have to be a funny scene, man.
Then we became friends. Me and Franco became friends.
Wow.
So we used to go Sundays up on Muscle Rock. With Artie Zell used to take Arnold up there and take pictures.
Yeah,
up
in Santa Monica, Rock. In Santa Monica Canyon.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So Franco says to me, because I went and talked in the car when Arnold was driving, because Arnold drives fast, and you go up in the hills, in those circles. So Franco says to me last year when I seen him, he says, am I still not talking? Because I was scared. You know, that's why I didn't talk when we was in the car. So he asked me, am I still talking? Not talking.
Leon, what was the scene like back then, you know, with guys with muscles? I mean, you were like this own little community walking around. Everybody was big and in shape and wearing tank tops and everything. How did the public react to you back then in the 60s?
They liked it. A lot of people liked it, yeah.
Were there a lot of women around? Were you guys partying it up a lot?
Once in a while with us, yeah, but Arnold didn't party too much.
No?
No.
Now, what would you go out to clubs?
Excuse me?
Would you go out to clubs and stuff like that, or just the women?
You know, like Bill Grant?
Sure.
So he came out there, too. He knew a lot of people out there, too.
Wow.
So we used to go to clubs and stuff. And a lot of guys in the gym used to be bouncers, too. They used to invite us to clubs.
Were you like celebrities there? Were there all the women coming up to you guys because you were so big?
Yeah.
Leon, what about the drug scene? The, you know, anabolics, you know, performance enhancing drugs. What kind of bodybuilding drugs did you guys do back then?
Mostly you've got people like D-Ball, Deca, Prima Bowen, Anavar.
So what was like a typical cycle?
But mostly it was like D-Ball and Anavar. I mean, yeah, D-Ball and Anavar, or Deca and Anavar.
Okay, so like you would do like Deca and D-Ball off season, and then leading up to a show, you would do Anavar. And
yeah, see, most of the time the guys out there, I would say 80% of the guys didn't do nothing until 12 weeks before a show, because everybody trained hard all year. Then 12 weeks, they would go in a cycle.
Wow, isn't that amazing? They would actually get bigger going into a show. Is that right?
Yeah.
So they would,
and they would be lean, then they would eat their way into a show.
That's so strange, isn't it? Thinking
compared to today, the way today is, it's like the opposite.
Right. Exactly. So you would start with like D-Ball and Decca, and then switch to like Decca and Anavar going into the show.
My whole career, you always just took Decca and Anavar. That was it.
That was your favorites.
Yeah, that's the only thing I ever took, Decca and Anavar, and once in a while some Primo.
How much? What kind of doses were you guys using?
It's crazy compared to today. Back then, the tablets was 2.5 milligrams a tablet. I would take 3 tablets a day, and I thought that was a lot. 2.5 milligrams and 1 cc of Decca.
The girls take more than that now. Oh my god!
Wow.
What was the who trained the hardest back in at Gold's Gym? If you had a pick of all the bodybuilders that were there,
I would tell you Arnold.
Arnold trained the hardest? The
hardest, yeah. He didn't train that heavy, but he trained hard.
Right, right.
Who was sometimes he was like triceps his back heavy. Sometimes.
Sometimes what?
He would do triceps for his back.
Oh, really?
I mean, heavy, you know, without stopping, 3 exercises, and heavy, not lightweight.
Incredible.
And Franco trained hard.
Who was the laziest guy back then? Who trained the least?
I don't know. Once you was in Gold's Gym, everybody trained hard. Once you get in that door.
Right.
I think that's when I made a lot of my best gains, when I was out there, too.
Everybody trained in shorts and tank tops back then, right?
Most, except sometimes before a show, they would cover up.
Ah, they wanted to see what they looked like.
Yeah.
Who was... did you guys hang out with each other after the gym?
Yeah.
Yeah, what kind of things did you guys used to do?
I used to hang around like Bill Grant and I... And remember Jesse Orton?
Jesse Orton?
Yeah, he was 66 Mr.
Sure.
America.
Yeah.
He'd be honored in the NABBA Universe.
Right, right.
Yeah, we used to hang around with him. He was kind of crazy.
What did you guys used to do? What made you guys crazy? What did you used to do?
I mean, you know, stuff we used to do. We used to go hang out with him. We'd go to clubs.
Yeah.
And he was just, he was older than us. You know, like maybe, I'd say maybe 6 or 7 years older than us, but, you know, he was like things he'd do we couldn't believe.
Such as?
Like, he was just playing nuts. In his own way, I mean.
Well, like how? What made him nuts?
He used to come to our house, he used to have Fresca, bring a bottle of Fresca, right?
Right.
And some kind of liquor. And drink it like crazy. Then he would go out. I mean, plus we all did it too with him too.
So you guys were partying it up a little bit,
yeah,
back in the day.
We did it all with him too, yeah. And then one time we was coming back from Tijuana, right? It was me, Bill Grant, George, and Jeff Smith. Jeff Smith, he was Mr. California. He passed away a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So we're in Tijuana. We were in the whole house is going crazy. then we're coming back. We have Bill has always had all together. We had like a whole load of juice in our car in the trunk. So Bill's the only sober guy out of all of us. And everybody's yelling and screaming and drinking up as we're driving by the border. And Bill says, "Keep quiet, keep quiet." And the more he says to us to keep quiet, the more we acted up. And then what happens at the border? They stop us.
No, really.
Yeah, and they says Bill got out because Bill worked for the airlines. There, he said, "Oh, these are my friends. I just brought them down here for sightseeing." And he explained the way because they wanted to search the car and all of this stuff.
Right.
But after Bill got out and talked to them, then they let us go. So they just keep these guys' head in the window.
Now, let me ask you a question, Leon, because a lot of people, you know, you got your pro card, but just recently.
I could have had my pro card, I tell you, in the 70s, but I never wanted it.
Yeah, well, tell us what happened with that, because you were beating guys like Franco, you were winning all the shows in California. Why didn't you ever get your pro card and follow in these other guys' footsteps?
First of all, I was still training hard, but I was fooling around too on the outside, hanging out and partying a lot. And this and that and doing this. And then I said, I'll stay amateur for right now, because these guys, you know, Franco was serious when he trained, you know, he never fooled around.
Right, right.
Arnold would come out once in a while and have a beer with you.
So you got a little too caught up in the scene out there?
Yeah.
Now, do you ever regret that at all?
Yep.
You do.
And, see, when I went to Western America, Joe Weider was going to give me a contract, and I messed that up too.
What happened with that?
My mother was dying, so I came back here and never went back out there.
Oh, you never went back? And
no.
And he had offered you a contract at that time?
But, you know, at that time, contract wasn't a big contract, I mean.
What were they paying back then?
About like $200.
A week?
Yeah, no.
A month?
Something like that, yeah.
$200 a month?
Yeah.
Wow. Wow, yeah, that wasn't a lot of money at all.
Even Arnold's first contract wasn't really that big money either.
Yeah, that was...
Because that's why him and Colombo had some kind of construction company.
Yeah, I remember that.
I heard they weren't very good at the construction.
And that's only about 3 months.
Franco was good, aren't you? They were good masons.
Yeah.
Yeah, bricklayer.
Yeah.
I heard they weren't good. I thought the business went flop.
It did. 3 months.
Yeah, something like that.
What about those? Weren't they making tapes for Joe? They were making some kind of audio tapes, and they were charging Joe. And then they got the idea that they should maybe make, instead of giving him one tape for what Joe was paying him, that they should just take the one tape and chop it up into a bunch of little tapes and see if Joe would pay him.
Yeah.
And then Joe caught him and fired him.
Yeah.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, he caught him.
Arnold was a shyster, huh, back in the day?
Arnold was smart. Even back then, when I used to hang around with him on the beach, he used to say, so we used to hang around, like I said, we hang out with all the older guys. He said, I'm going to be the best bodybuilder in the world. I'm going to be a movie star. I'm going to go in politics. And they said, you can't even speak English. How are you going to do all that?
He was right, though.
He was right.
And I remember one time on the beach, we were all hanging out on the beach. So Arnold says, I'm going to go swimming. So he left his clothes on the beach. And I said, we got to go. I said, I got to go. Because that's when we was working. I said, I got to go to get ready to go home and go to work. So he stayed at the beach by himself. And somebody stole his clothes.
No. What did he do?
Nothing he could do. So he had his swimming trunks on. So like Gold's Gym was about like 3 blocks away. So he had to walk back to the gym and tell somebody to give him some clothes.
Oh, my God. That's funny. Was it one of you guys that did the joke on him?
No, we left him because we had to go.
Oh,
he said, no, I'm going to go swimming.
Did he blame you guys?
No. You know we wouldn't do nothing like that. Yeah. We might fool around, but we wouldn't take his clothes.
Right. Now, Arnold had a rep as being a big practical joker himself. Did he ever get you?
No.
He never got you?
No.
Any funny stories about other people that he got?
He didn't joke that much with us, I mean. But he had to fool around with a lot of girls.
Did the girls like him?
Yeah.
Was it because he was so big, or did he just because he had a good personality?
Because his personality, yeah.
Yeah. What was one of the most embarrassing moment with Arnold? Was it with a girl?
No.
Can you think of one?
Well, they stole his clothes, John.
That's pretty embarrassing.
So, yeah.
Was that the best? That's the worst one?
Yeah.
Did you ever see? You ever see Arnold like dating any like famous movie stars back in those days?
No.
It was just regular girls back then.
Yeah. Mm.
Now, do you see Arnold today still? Like, when you run into him, he always comes up to you, I know, especially at the Arnold Classic.
In fact, I seen him at the Arnold Classic.
Now, if let's say you wanted to call him up on the phone because you had to ask him something, do you think he would take your phone call?
Yeah, I have his personal number.
You do?
Yeah. In fact, I just got a letter from his wife about 3 weeks ago.
What was that about?
Because, you know, I met her mother-in-law, his mother-in-law, and Ted Kennedy. Years ago, I sent her a condolence card for her mother.
Oh, right.
And then she sent me a nice letter back. Then I sent another card to her when Ted died.
Right, just recently, yeah.
Yeah. Oh. See, like all Arnold's security, his bodyguards know us, and his private secretary know us. Every time I call, he puts Arnold right on the phone.
Wow. Now, why would you have an incident to call Arnold? What would you ask him, like, if you had to give him a call?
No, usually I call him like anniversaries, birthday, and Christmas time.
Gotcha.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha.
Stuff like that.
When's Arnold's birthday?
July 30th.
Oh, you still remember? Oh. I was just checking on you to see if you weren't full of shit.
So, but we're the same age.
You are?
I'm only 4 months older than him.
Oh, oh shit. Wow.
So Arnold's like that with all the guys from the old days. He's still friends with all of them, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He never turned his back on anybody.
No.
How do you think Arnold's doing as governor of California?
I think he wants to get out of there.
Yeah.
I think this is his last year, right?
Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
You think he's doing?
It's a lot of mess. It's their mess is worse than here in New York out there.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
What does Arnold say to you? Does he say he's happy to get out of there, or is he?
No,
is he...
no. He just said, you know, because he's around all these people all the time. He just talk about, you know, like when he see me talk about bodybuilding and stuff.
Right.
But you know, like, of course, he's like sometimes with this guy, you know, important people, so he don't say too much about
the government, yeah,
politics, yeah.
Yeah.
What's he got? Well, are you going to hook up with him at the Arnold Classic this year? I know you usually go.
Yeah, he just gave me another jacket. I got. This is going to be his 22nd year. Out of 22 years, I only missed 6 times.
Wow.
And I got a jacket for every year.
You think you can get him on our show for us?
I don't know.
Well, I mean, he'll take your call. I mean, just ask him if you want to talk to Dave and John for a couple minutes.
Yeah, come on. Pull some strings for us, Leon.
You could be on with him.
I'll call him during the week.
Ask him. Tell him we're very big supporters of his show and it would mean a lot to us.
Yeah.
Because on the weekends they don't answer the phone on the weekend.
Yeah, I don't blame him. But yeah. You know, we'll pre-tape it at his convenience.
Yeah.
We'll do it in the middle of the night whenever you want. You Arnold, you Arnold, Dave, and me.
That's right. And if you can't get him on the radio, maybe you can get him to do an interview with John at least. You can answer a couple questions for the website.
I mean, because it's for bodybuilding, Leon. Come on.
Come on, Leon. You're a New York boy. You got to pull some strings for the boys back here.
I will.
All right, good.
Now, people don't realize you're still competing, you know?
Yeah.
What's the next show for Leon Brown?
I'm going to try to go to some master show next year.
Okay. Now, when did you officially get your pro card? Because they did give it to you at some point.
I could have got it. I got it in 89.
89, they gave it to you. What show did you win for that?
I won the Masters Nationals.
Okay, so they gave it retroactively to you. Is that what it was?
But I could have won it before. Yeah, I could have got it before when I won my class in America and the world. I could have
got it. Oh, that's right. Yeah, you could have applied for it. True.
Yeah.
True. You also won the NPC Junior USA in 1984, too.
Yeah.
People don't realize that, you know, and you beat Tom Terwilliger in the overall.
Yeah.
So yeah, you've beaten some good guys over the years. It's what are you now, 62?
Yeah.
So you're going to do some Masters competitions. You know, I think they do have an over 60 class, don't they? It's Leon versus Charlie Arms. Those are the two guys, the two standouts left.
Bill Grant, you got to watch out for Bill Grant.
Yeah. Bill Grant's
good. True. Bill Grant probably won't compete again, I don't think.
No.
I don't know. I like the Masters shows. I don't know why they don't hold them anymore.
I know.
Every couple of years they have one.
And when I was talking to Janet Tanner, she was telling me she was trying to get the Masters Olympia back.
That would be great. You know, if you can if they can do it. I love watching the old timers get up there, man. Yeah. Pretty soon we're going to be old timers, John.
I'm already an old timer.
Leon, I just thank you for calling in and giving us some of your stories from back in the day, because you're one of the few people that has bridged that gap and has stayed in bodybuilding after all these years.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. What gym do you train at nowadays?
I train three different gyms over here in Staten Island. Synergy, Dolphin, and Pump and Iron.
All right. Pumping Iron's a good gym. Yeah.
So now call Arnold next week and see about hooking us up here.
And I try to get to Bev Gym at least twice a month.
Oh, you get down there. Okay. Yeah. When you're down there, you got to let us know. We got to film a training video with you.
Twice a month, I get there.
Well, why don't you tell us when you're going to be there next, and we'll film you. We'll do a little training video with Leon Brown.
Okay.
All right.
And then we got to try to catch up with Arnold.
That's right. You got to call Arnold to make sure you get him on our show for us.
Okay.
All right, Leon. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, okay. Leon.
This is Heavy Muscle Radio, only on RxMuscle.com. ALR Industries. ALR Industries products are backed by 3 decades of experience in the science and lifelong dedication to bodybuilding from its founder, Arthur L. Ray. In 2001, ALR Industries was created to give the hardcore bodybuilder the edge you need to build the perfect beast. Hyperdrive 3.0 is a synergistic blend of fat-burning herbs which yields the most potent legally available formula on the market today. Hyperdrive 3.0 will burn fat, control your appetite, improve your mood and focus, and give you an energy boost you've never experienced. Restore blocks estrogen, enhances libido, and optimizes free testosterone. You'll be stronger, recover faster, and build muscle like never before. Then, fuel your workouts with the great-tasting and energy-enhancing Hyper Shot. Hyper Shot will boost your athletic performance to new levels, allowing you to train harder, improve your endurance, and get the most out of your time in the gym. Whining is not an option for those who refuse to accept mediocrity. Visit
ALRIndustries.com today.
When you hit the gym, you set in motion a fundamental set of molecular activation signals and cellular growth mechanisms that deliver your desired gains in mass and strength. The magnitude of those processes, as well as how efficiently your muscles recover force production, can dramatically affect your net progress in a training cycle. Progenics protein supplements interact precisely and powerfully to amplify these pathways to produce enhanced growth responses of 100% or more compared to conventional whey protein sources. And they facilitate full recovery of force production in just 6 hours following the most grueling workout, allowing you to train harder, more frequently, for more dramatic gains. Experience the exclusive metabolic advantage available from Nature's Toolbox and Dr. Scott Connolly, renowned pioneer in applied dairy science and inventor of the original Metrex product. Go to ProgenicsSRG.com and use the code NBR801 to get 10% off the purchase of any single Progenics product.
When the world crumbles around you, will you be ready to fight back? Brutal Alchemy Performance Nutrition's unique line of supplements will help you win the war in the gym. Ancient Strength is a unique blend of three creatine esters which will infuse you with the ancient strength needed for the battle at hand. Isolation is a pure whey protein isolate that provides 26 grams of protein in every 29-gram scoop. Attack NO2 is Brutal Alchemy's nitric oxide booster that will increase your pumps and performance. After your battle in the gym, it's time for Onslaught, Brutal Alchemy's comprehensive post-workout drink, providing everything you need to suffuse your muscles, joints, and body with the components to heal, grow stronger, and return to the fray. And when it's time to conquer in the bedroom, you'll need Forged Steel, Brutal Alchemy's male enhancement product. Lead the charge to BrutalAlchemy.com to obtain the essential elements of your brutal transformation. Brutal Alchemy, it's better to be a member of the Horde than to be destroyed by it. German American Technologies. Compete harder with GATT supplements. Need energy? Gotta lose the fat? Jet Fuel is the answer. Want to build muscle? Use Testogen to ramp up testosterone and start adding the size. How about some muscle exploding pumps and an enhanced training experience? You gotta get your hands on some Jet Fuel. Jet Fuel, GATT's newest nitric oxide training supplement that's guaranteed to work the second you try it. Join the team. Visit German American Technologies website now at TeamGAT.com. That's TeamGAT.com. German American Technologies. Compete harder. TeamGAT.com.
Get in D-Mix. That's D-Mix, the world's first energy pump that combines the most essential nutritional elements for overall health with efficiency. Cool and easy to use, D-Mix is the most powerful and unique multivitamin antioxidant energy formula on the market. D-Mix is a nutritional wonder that lasts up to 4 days. D-Mix is available in three delicious flavors: coffee, mint, and punch. Each flavor is designed to be taken on its own or added to other beverages. D-Mix, don't drink, just pump. Healthy energy.
Who are the Iron Sirens? The heroes: Susie Curry, Adela Garcia, Jenny Lynn, Crystal Richardson. Who are the Dark Divas? Gina Aliotti as Diva X, Jen Gates as Shade, Liza Kamstra as Black Lotus, Sonia Gonzalez as Raptress, and their story is told only in Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens is a one-of-a-kind, limited-edition comic book series and is the brainchild of J.M. Mannion. Order your copy of Iron Sirens today before they're gone. Visit IronSirensComics.com. That's IronSirensComics.com to get your copy of Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. Iron Sirens. RxMuscle.com. Now you have a place to turn when you want the truth on bodybuilding, diet, and exercise, up-to-the-minute news, and more. Visit the RxMuscle.com forums featuring celebrity Q&As with IFBB professional athletes, top amateurs, and the brightest minds in the industry. Listen to our weekly radio shows, including Heavy Muscle Radio, Muscle Girls Inc., After Hours, and more. Contest coverage, videos, even our own social networking site, RX Muscle Place. Visit RxMuscle.com.
Heavy Muscle Radio.
This is IFBB Pro Johnny Jackson, and you listen to Heavy Muscle Radio.
This hour of Heavy Muscle Radio is brought to you by Progenics. Visit ProgenicsSRG.com.
All right, our next guest is the owner of Daugherty's 24/7 Gym. He's also the promoter of the Australian Grand Prix, and he's a former guest of this show many times over. I want to welcome back Tony Daugherty.
Hey guys, how you doing?
How's it going down there in Australia? What time is it now?
It's 8 o'clock on a Monday morning here, so we're I think 15 hours ahead.
Yeah, you're way ahead of us. You're into the next day already. We're still enjoying our weekend.
Yeah, it's springtime here. It's a beautiful spring morning. Everything's good.
Well, it's a beautiful fall morning here, or fall afternoon, I should say. But let's start right off by what's going on, because I understand that Daugherty's 24/7 gym is expanding.
Yeah, we opened our second gym just on 12 months ago, which is a massive facility out in one of the outer suburbs called Dandenong. And then on the 1st of July this year, we opened one in downtown in Melbourne, right in the heart of the city, 1,200 square metres. And all the gyms are going 24 hours on November 2nd. So next Monday morning, we open forever for all the three gyms, so that's going to be something else.
That's incredible. You know, we don't even have those kind of gyms here anymore in New York. There's nothing that's open 24/7. Do you constantly have people working there, or is it like a pass key type of situation where people can go in there at their leisure?
No, we have them fully staffed all the time. You know, that's when we get our cleaning done, and you know, the night shift guys do vacuum the gym and stock the fridges and get everything ready to go. But we're busy all the time. I mean, the world's a 24-hour place, and you know, we get cab drivers, waiters, bouncers, dancers, emergency workers, police, nurses, airline people. There's a whole, you know, different people that work at night. And the way we look at it is people need to train, and the kind of gyms that we run are not for the person who thinks they want to get fit. We're kind of hardcore gyms, and we find that the kind of people like us need to train. They don't want to train, they need to. That's their fix.
Right.
So if the gyms are available any time of the day or night, then people can go do what they've got to do. And see, too many gym owners just worry about the dollars. They think, but that's not commercially successful. Mm-hmm. But that's bullshit, because people are going to join your gym not because they will train at night, but because they might need to. So in that sense, it's a great sales point, a great gimmick, and whether people use it or not, that's why they join. So it's a good thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's phenomenal that you guys have enough of a clientele down there that you can do 24/7. What does a typical Australian gym have in terms of membership or numbers of members?
I couldn't talk about anyone else's gym. I'm not really sure, man. I'm in my own world, you know what I mean?
Right, how many members do you guys have?
Our main gym in Brunswick, which has been open 24 hours approaching 12 years now, we'd have at any time between 1,500 and 2,000 members.
Wow, that's good. Good size. Now,
And the other ones are building up nicely, so it's all good.
Good. Congratulations. Now, recently, I understand you promoted a show down there, down under, and there was a competitor that died while competing, and that made kind of national news. A lot of people were talking about it rather than, you know, talk about rumors. Why don't you tell us exactly what happened?
Well, I think we should hit that on the head straight away. First of all, nobody died on stage. We had a competitor suffered a major heart attack on stage, and he died later on in the hospital that night. And look, first I've got to say it was a very tragic thing, and we'd like to offer our sympathy and condolences to his family and friends. Anyone that might be listening that might know the guy, he's a fellow I'd known for nearly 25 years. He was 52 years old. Had been competing on and off, you know, every 5 or 6 years over that time. And, you know, he's a good guy and very, very knowledgeable guy. He wrote a lot of the programs for supplement companies and designed supplements. And, you know, he wasn't like a first-timer or anything else. And, unfortunately, he suffered a major heart attack while he was on stage. He collapsed, and I thought, you know, maybe he was dehydrated. We went to his aid to see if he needed some water or refreshment. And, honestly, within 20 seconds, I knew it was much worse than that. We evacuated the hall the best I could. I said, ladies and gentlemen, please evacuate out into the foyer and let us do what we're going to do. Our stage staff, which are all CPR qualified, worked on him while we waited for the paramedics. Then they worked on him for some time, quite a long time, and revived him. And he had a pulse when he left, but he was in a bad way. They took him to the hospital, and we got word later on that he died. But let me explain a couple of things first. One of the headlines that people have put on message boards, competitor dies on stage. Well, he didn't die on stage. He had a heart attack on stage and he died later. It was a tragic event. We did everything we could to save him. However, the paramedics later advised me that if he had had the same heart attack in a hospital ward, in a hospital bed, in an emergency department, it would have been the same result. Mm. It was a massive heart attack, so much so that the damage that was done to his heart couldn't have been fixed. And then I should say, this fellow had a history of heart disease. He'd had a heart murmur for years and he knew it. He'd suffered, his friends have told me, blood pressure and different diseases, and his bodybuilding was his way of keeping fit and keeping that at bay. And at 52, his heart gave out. You know, and I think what we need to point out, I had some press interviews and stuff during the week, and people say, oh, you know, do you think the bodybuilding lifestyle contributed to it? Well, the same weekend there was a half marathon in Detroit, and three people dropped dead.
True, right. True.
None of them were bodybuilders. None of them were taking gear. None of them were lifting weights. They were really fit runners, and three of them died. And it's a terrible thing, you know, but it happens in everyday life. I've got a friend who runs an art gallery museum in the city, and they have an old person die every week of heart failure because old people go to museums. And unfortunately, when you look at bodybuilding, we have hundreds of competitors every year on stage. I've been promoting nearly 25 years, and we've never had this kind of thing before. And one of the ignorant people in the press out here said to me, oh, what normally happens when people collapse on stage? Well, I said, they normally don't collapse on stage. His day was up, you know, and unfortunately, sadly, he passed away. And it's a terrible thing for his family and friends to deal with without people speculating that, oh, you know, he took something or it was bodybuilding that killed him. And look, let me say this. I've been around bodybuilding, you guys know me well, and I've been around it all my life. And sometimes at a weigh-in, I'll see someone with sucked-in face and poking out eyes, and you think, shit, this guy's dehydrated. And I'll say, listen, you got to make sure you drink because this could be really harmful for your health. Or, you know, when you see some people, you kind of get a fright at how far they've taken it. This guy, Gary, he wasn't in that category at all. He came to the weigh-in on the Friday night, and we talked for 20 minutes about old times and how long we'd known each other, and it was kind of ironic that we had that talk, and we got on like old friends, and we just talked about how time had got away, and you know, I've got kids now, and all that sort of stuff. I'm good chatting away, and he didn't have a sunken face or drawn out eyes or anything like that. And while he was in good condition, and no disrespect to him, but he wasn't in frightening or great condition that would make you think he had taken things too far or had it dehydrated or had even used any substances. You know, he looked healthy, but like a 52-year-old guy in a Masters contest, he wasn't setting the world on fire.
Right. What was his name?
Unfortunately, he had a heart attack.
What was the competitor's name? I mean, we've been talking about.
His name is Gary Himing, okay. H-I-M-I-N-G. He'd been competing, as I said, for the last 25 years. He actually judged the very first contest I ever ran in 1986, I think it was, and went on to compete with me, I think, in 89, again in 92. I think he last competed, he told me, at the weigh-in in 2001. You know, he said, oh, this is the big comeback. Well, it wasn't a big comeback. He was just a knock-around kind of bodybuilder that competed every few years. It was his lifestyle and his choice, and that's what he did. And in all sports, there's risks, but you know, motor racing people crash cars, and we had some guys that did yachting, you know, the sailing here in Australia the other day. They've been sailing for 35 years and they went into a cliff and two or three of them died on the boat. And you know, this happens in all sorts of sports, as we said, marathon runners, people die on golf courses, in American football, all kinds of walks of life. And sometimes you can contribute it to the sport or the risk that they're taking. Sometimes they just die. And in this sad, sad situation, the guy just died. He had a massive heart attack that, as I said, it would have killed him if he had it in a hospital bed. Unfortunately, he had it on stage, but I don't think it had a whole lot to do with the stress of the competition. I'm not a medical professional, but from what the medical professional said to me, it was a heart attack he was going to have. And while it's sad and obviously terrible for his family and friends, this stuff happens in everyday life. People have heart attacks everywhere they go, and unfortunately for us, he had that heart attack on stage and died later in hospital. And once again, I've just got to offer my sympathy and support to his family and friends. He was a well-liked guy, and he was a personal trainer, so obviously he helped a lot of people improve their lives, and they'd all be doing it kind of hard right now.
You know, I'm glad you cleared all that up, Tony, because there were a lot of speculation, a lot of rumors, a lot of misinformation, and it's great to get it right from the horse's mouth. So we appreciate that, and of course. Of course.
Well, that's all we can do, guys. And, you know, I think it's very unfair of people to speculate and to kind of call facts when they've got no clue about what's going on, and particularly in a sad case like this. And you know, everyone wants to be an expert and all the rest of it. People should really check their facts out before they start. You know, some of these threats, bodybuilder dies on stage. Well, that's a lie to start with. And let me say, look, the press over here has been kind of good. We had a couple of interviews with newspapers and stuff, and they've handled it quite professionally and delicately, and with respect to his family. Nobody's jumped on this bodybuilding kills guy or anything like that. It's kind of, you know, could have been a lot worse, and I think the facts have shone through, and everyone's treating it like, well, out here, and the people involved just treating it like the sad, sad event that it is.
Right. Well, our condolences go out, too, and we just want to hope we have a safe rest of the season. Now, Tony, we know we talked to Ronnie Coleman not long ago, and he said that he's coming down there. He's been down there for the last few weeks. How'd that trip go with Ronnie?
Well, I've been on the road with Ronnie for the last 3 weeks. We did I've been emceeing all the contests, so I've kind of seen a lot of Ron lately. First of all, he came and we did a show up in Darwin, which is up in the Northern Territory, which a lot of Americans don't know about. It's the kind of top northwest of Australia. It's a real outback town. It's a capital city, but there's only like just over 100,000 people. And that's where all the crocodiles live, you know. It's where they come up in the main street and everything. They caught a crocodile there last week, 30 k's from Darwin, that was 4.7 meters long. That's five yards long.
Holy 4.7 meters?
Did you have Ronnie Coleman wrestle it?
Well, it's like 14 feet, 15 feet long.
Yeah. No, Ronnie didn't. No. He went to a crocodile farm. He went to, remember Steve Irwin, who passed away a couple of years ago?
Yeah, the crocodile guy.
Died doing what he loved doing, and he got hit by a stingray. And he's got his family runs a place called Australia Zoo in another state of Australia called Queensland that Ronnie did go to last week. So he saw some crocodiles there in the cage. I think they got one up there about 6 meters long that Ronnie would have seen. But no, he didn't jump in with it or wrestle or anything.
I thought you might have some good pictures for us or something, you know.
Yeah, no. Well, Ronnie went up to Darwin. It's really hot up there. You know, that's kind of in the tropics in Australia. And I guess, you know, he's used to that Texas weather. So we all went up there and sweated and thought, this is unbearable. Ronnie was like, this is just beautiful. He loved it. So he gets posed up there, and he had a huge day because they've never had a pro bodybuilder in Darwin ever. And have 8-time Mr. Olympia, the greatest ever up there. You know, he set him on fire. Then we had my own show last week, the one we just talked about, where you know, Ronnie guest posed. We had the unfortunate incident of the prejudging, but we got on with the show, and you know, we had to sort of really dig deep to perform that day because you know, we knew what was going on in the background, and we put on a hell of a show. You know, sometimes when you're up against the odds, you find the best in yourself, and we all put on a good show, and we had a great interview with Ron, and I've interviewed Ron since 1997 was the first time we brought him out here, and we've had him out about 7 times since. I shot a DVD with him here in my gym called On the Road with Ronnie Coleman. So I've had a chance to interview Ronnie many, many, many times, and you know, I know him pretty well. So we had a good interview and a few laughs, and then he guest posed and did real well. Then we had the next day a show on the Sunshine Coast, which is in Queensland. Then just yesterday and Saturday we had a 2-day show in Sydney, which is our national championships, and that was huge. We had a huge show in Sydney, 140 competitors over 2 days, and he guest posed on both days, and we interviewed him on both days. Now, let me just tell you this, you know, on the boards and everything, everybody's been saying Ron's out of shape, Ron shouldn't be guest posing, what's he doing? Well, we contacted him early in the year, and I'm like, Ronnie, you know, what kind of shape can we expect you in? And all the fans were like, oh, what's Ronnie going to look like? And he made me a promise early in the year. He said, Tony, I'm going to train for this tour like it's my 2009 Mr. Olympia. I'm really going to train for this. And he did, you know. He got himself in awesome shape. I don't know if you've seen any of the pictures.
Yeah, he looks good.
Dave, and he looked great. And he got better, you know, from Darwin to Sydney, which was 3 weeks, he improved every single day. And he could get himself into frightening shape. If he decided to compete early in the year, he could be in frightening shape. He's back on. I'll tell you, he's as good as he's looked in the last 2 or 3 years.
You think Ronnie's going to compete in 2010?
I don't know. You know, I think sometimes sometimes I think he is, and sometimes I think he's just messing with us, just saying, oh, yeah, I might, you know, just keeping it alive. And everyone looking at him. A whole lot of work while he does. I mean, he's not silly. A lot of people mistake, they think because Ronnie's got that southern accent that he's not real bright. But Ronnie's a very smart guy, and he's still the most popular guest poser in the world. He sold out of merchandise 3 times while he was in Australia. We had this big shipping more stuff out to him. The fans, I'll give you an idea. Check this out. At my show here in Melbourne, he started selling merchandise at 10 o'clock in the morning. We had him come on stage and guest pose at 4 o'clock. So he sold non-stop. We couldn't even get the people out of the venue after the pre-judging.
Wow.
Lined up for 2 hours to meet him. So we had to go around and check everybody in the queue to see if they had tickets to the finals. And then we left them in the venue. As the people with just pre-judging tickets got their photograph with Ronnie, we'd boot them out. So we couldn't even evacuate the crowd after the pre-judging. We let the crowd in for the finals, and his queue just built up again. Some people didn't even see the show, so they paid to get in to see the show, stayed on the queue all day to get a photograph or a T-shirt or DVD from Ronnie. And check it out. He's like a rock star. We come out from the venue, and we had an Escalade to drive around in for the weekend. So we got it parked right at the front door of the venue. So after the guest post, I said, Ronnie, we're really going to go. We're going to get him to an airport to do a show in Queensland the next day, and there's very limited flights, blah, blah, blah. So we start to take him out of the venue, and he got swamped by fans. You know, they're trying to touch him. He's walking along. We kind of got security around him. We're moving him through this crowd, and people are screaming. This grown man, oh, Ronnie Coleman! Creepy. And we got him outside the venue, and they surrounded the car, and they're trying to put their hands in their window. They're poking photographs and caps and T-shirts and pens and shit in the window, saying, oh, come on, Ronnie, please sign this.
Wow.
And I said to my driver, man, just get on the gas, get out of here, we've got to go, we've got to get to the airport. And he said, one more fan, they're poking shit in his window. So he does this, he told me later, the guys now were late, so he's taken off to the airport anyway. He got like 5 miles from the venue or something, he pulled up at a red light, this car comes screeching, a fan jumps out of the car at the red light, bangs on his window, Ronnie, you didn't sign my shirt. And he had to sign the dude's shirt at a red light.
Well,
this is how crazy this is. There was people waiting at the airport for him. You know, he's a rock star out here, and I really wondered, because this, as I said, this is the 7th or 8th time we brought him here. I'm thinking, one more tour, will it work? It worked better than any tour we've ever done with Ronnie. We've had sellout shows in every single state. He's made a ton of money. He's sold out of everything he's got, and people love Ronnie. I've got to tell you, and he's so good to work with. I mean, I love interviewing. I've interviewed everyone. I love interviewing Ronnie Coleman. He's got such a great story to tell, and people who don't know Ronnie don't understand. He hasn't changed a bit from that humble guy, you know, that we brought out in 1997, that hadn't won an Olympia and nobody had heard of him, to 8-time Mr. Olympia. He just hasn't changed.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Yeah,
he's good. More money, and he's in a better place financially. But as far as humility and remembering where he's come from and spending time with his fans, and he hasn't changed a bit. You know, he's got an incredible story, and everyone that meets him loves him.
Because you know what I think the deal is with Ronnie? I don't think Ronnie has any aspirations of being more than what he is, which is an 8-time Mr. Olympia. He likes that role. He embraces it, and he's so happy that he's making a living from it, whereas a lot of other guys like trying to use bodybuilding as a way to get to a higher level, whether it be acting or something like that. Ronnie's very comfortable in his role.
Correct. Well, you know, I think you've got to look at the psychology of that, is that Ronnie never set out to be 8-time Mr. Olympia. You know, his story is he got a free membership at the gym and kept going, and he didn't get a call out in his first Mr. Olympia. Then the next year he got 15th, and next year 11th, then 9th, then 6th, and back to 9th again. Then he almost gave up. And the year before he won, he was going to give up. He thought, oh, maybe I'm no good at this. And of course, in 98 when he won, he wasn't the favourite. No one was talking about him. Everyone was talking about Flex Wheeler. And Ronnie came out and won. And he annihilated the competition. And once again, he thought, well, maybe that was a fluke. He says this to me in every interview we do. Maybe that was kind of like an accident. Maybe they got it wrong. Better do it one more time just in case. And he won again.
Right.
Now, just to understand this, Ronnie won 3 Mr. Olympias before he even considered giving up his job. He had a full-time job.
Right.
People think he had it easy. The guy was doing 10-hour shifts. in a bulletproof vest in a squad car in Texas.
Right.
So it wasn't like his workmates gave him a break. Oh, Ronnie's got the Olympia this week. We better make sure he gets his food. They didn't give a shit.
Right.
Yeah, they're like, they're into their shooting or their NASCAR or whatever, and he's into his bodybuilding. And no one gave him a hand. He didn't expect anything from anyone, and he kept working. And to the fans and young guys who are out there listening, I get guys coming to the gym saying, oh, I'm going to give up my job to do this novice competition. Keep your job, man, because, you know, if Ronnie Coleman can win the Olympia three times working full-time, well, nobody else in the world has got an excuse. Now, when you look at the psychology of that and think, okay, well, he went on to win 8 Mr. Olympias, well, everything he did was a bonus. He never expected to do anything with his life.
Sure.
He never expected, you know, he was delivering pizzas and throwing newspapers when he was qualified in accounting. He couldn't get a job because, right. He was Ronnie. So, he's a very smart guy. He graduated with honors from his university. He did that. He was very loyal to the police department. And he never expected to win one Olympia. So he went on to win 8. It's not a stepping stone to acting for Ronnie. He didn't want to be a movie star or a politician or anything else. He's 8-time Mr. Olympia. And you're dead right. He loves it.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you a question, because Ronnie had mentioned on our show that he probably expected to make about 50 grand when all was said and done out in Australia. You think he made more than that?
What's that?
You think he made more than 50 grand going out there for 3 weeks?
You guys can do the math. Let's just say Ronnie killed it. I'm not in a position to talk about Ronnie's finances.
He
sold out of stuff.
What does he get paid to do?
Well, I don't want to say that because, you know, there's taxes and, you know,
forget the pictures. Forget the pictures. What did he get paid? Forget the pictures. What did he get paid to do the guest posings at all the different venues?
I wouldn't disclose that. You know, they've all got their fee. You know,
you guys are all shady.
Let me just say this. No, it's not that. It's just I'm very respectful of any professional, and if I do a deal with you guys, I'm not going to talk to anyone else about it either. But Ronnie, look, he charges well, and we pay him well to guest post. But let me say, there's guys coming up through the sport who haven't won anything yet that are expecting to charge more than some of the current Mr. Olympias. Ronnie's still very fair. He makes really good money when he's out here. You know, they get their posing fee. He travels first class. He stays in 5-star hotels and gets paid very well for each appearance that he does. And then he sells a whole lot of stuff. And I'm talking, you got no idea. When you see these people queuing up for 8 hours at a time, and he can turn around those pitches pretty quick. Don't worry about that.
I'll bet.
Ronnie done real well out of the tour. I would say this would be his most successful tour he's ever done of Australia, and I've seen him walk out of here not knowing what to do with his money. So,
that means it's more than 50 grand, John.
More than 50.
That'd be very conservative.
He told us 50, so we were just trying to figure out if he'd probably
75.
Well, let's just say it was even busier than he expected. So if he told you 50, you just add some.
We'll leave it at that. Yeah. Tony, what about the 2010 Australian Grand Prix? How are the plans for that coming along?
Well, you know, it's going to be my 10th pro show, and you look at that and say, shit, how time flies. It's like, yes, I was just thinking about maybe we should do a pro show out here, and here we go for our 10th one. So being the 10th one, I want to make it bigger and better than ever. We've got some great ideas for the promotion and the production of the show itself, with more, you know, more fireworks and more lights and more on-stage entertainment, if you like. The biggest problem with my show is that we don't get the list of the names for the Arnold Classic till normally around Christmas. And by then, of course, everyone wants a poster out, and we can't sort of plan who we're going to get here until we see the Arnold list, because unashamedly I just take as many people as I can out of the Arnold Classic and bring them here.
Sure.
That's the whole reason I think the show should be close together, and I think that's where a lot of promoters don't get good lineups, because they put their show on in the middle of nowhere. Why would you? If you've got the best bodybuilders in the world in shape for a certain event, well, why not work with that rather than go against it? To me, it's not rocket science. So once we see the name of the Arnold, well, you guys might be able to tell me, who do you think's going to do the Arnold this year? Do you think Dennis Wolfe's going to do it?
I think he probably will. I think Kai Greene will do it again too, and I know he was a big draw out there for you this year.
Yeah, man, he's the best guest I've ever had out here at a pro show. What, you know, we talked about him, I think, the day after the show.
Sure.
I was just in awe of him as a bodybuilder and as a person. And he reminds me of Ronnie, you know, in that he's humble, he's come from nothing, but he's got hanging muscle like Ronnie Coleman had. You know, you look at Ronnie when he came out in 2003 and raised that bar. I said to people, seeing Ronnie in 2003 was like looking to the future. Wow, what did he do? And Ty's the only guy that's added muscle at the same rate as Ronnie. You think about it, he's just got better and better every year. You know, he didn't quite do what he wanted to do at the Olympia this year, but he wasn't far off doing what he could have done. And to be fourth in your first ever Mr. Olympia, that's kind of like winning when you think about it.
Sure.
And the way he's improving, I mean, he'd be my number one guess. If I can get Kai back here at my show, I'm one happy promoter, you know? So if he does the Arnold, definitely I'd move the earth to get Kai back here, and would be honored to have him. I'd love to have Dennis Wolfe in the show, because I think he's going to have something to prove, and he's going to be, you know, nastier and bigger and badder than ever. Who else is going to do the Arnold? Yeah, Dexter was talking about doing it. We might end up with our greatest lineup ever.
You might, but you'll keep us updated as it goes along. You know, right now we're out of time, but I want to just thank you for waking up early in the morning, Tony, and calling in to the show.
Thank you, guys. Keep up the good work. Thanks for having me on the show. It's always a pleasure. And thanks to all the listeners for supporting it. And we'll talk again soon, huh?
All right, Tony. Good day, mate. Hey, I love Tony. He can talk forever. He's probably the only guy who could talk longer than you and I can, John.
Yeah, he's definitely a talker. He loves bodybuilding. It's always good to have someone on our show who loves bodybuilding as much as we love it.
I know that.
And, you know, it's... What can you say?
You know, look, my friend Anthony DiRezzo passed away. Remember at the Masters Nationals?
Yes,
he wasn't on stage, but people... He's right. Tony's right. People die. They have heart attacks all the time. It really happens very infrequently if you think about bodybuilding.
Sure.
So if anything, I think bodybuilding is probably a healthy sport in that sense. More people die on a football field, track and field, marathons, basketball courts in college. So, you know, it's bound to happen. And I think Tony sounded like they handled it very well down there. And it sounds like Ronnie Coleman is just like a freaking superstar down there.
Yeah.
I mean, it must be real. I'd like to get a camera on him and follow him around down there.
We didn't ask Tony anything about Lee Priest. I was... wondering what his relationship with between them is now.
I think him and Lee Priest get along. They've known each other for years. You know, Lee's getting ready supposedly for the Arnold 202 class, and you know, we'll keep that update going on as we get updates on it.
It'd be great for a RX Muscle video to trail Ronnie Coleman and Lee Priest around Australia.
You know, it's funny because, you know, Lee is from Australia, so they probably don't get so excited about him because they see him a lot.
Right.
But Ronnie, you know, I could just completely see people going crazy for him. And, you know, he loves it. He'll just hang out with the fans all day. Yeah. He doesn't, as long as you feed this guy, he's fine.
As long as he's fit. As long as he has his KC masterpiece.
That's right. Well, you know, I thought we had a great show today. Leon Brown is a real class act. And, you know, a lot of people, I call him the hidden treasure because no one really knows much about him. They see him at the shows. They don't know all those stories inside him. And I know we only got a fraction of him out there.
Yeah.
We could probably, if we wrung his wrist a little bit, we probably get some even better ones.
Yeah, you know, people talk about Leon Brown, the people that we know him, and say, well, you know, he partied a lot and whatever. But I'll tell you what, you know, he even knew the names of the judges. Okay. Leon's a lot sharper than he may give off. And I'm glad we had him on. And I'm going to bug the shit out of him about getting in touch with Arnold, because I know he will.
Yeah, he will probably.
Yeah, he will.
Arnold may not do anything about it, but he'll definitely get in touch with him.
At least he'll get in touch with him. You know,
Leon, the thing that strikes me as fancy about him, or as being odd, is the fact that Leon actually is very honest about the fact that he kind of fucked up in a sense.
Right.
He could have had that pro card earlier, and he could have been up there with Franco and Arnold, and he just, his lifestyle choices just weren't, you know, as mature maybe as they needed to be at the time. And, you know, he does regret it. You know, he admitted it.
Yeah. Well,
it's a tough pill to swallow if you think about it.
Sure is, especially when you see the people around you, you know, going up and doing the things that they did. Franco became very successful. Arnold, of course, you know, rocked the world. And Leon, you know, Leon is living in Staten Island, training at
Pump and Iron
Gym. So God bless him. 50 years of competition. He still loves the sport. He still remembers everything about his past. And, you know, regardless of what he may have made of himself over the course of his life, he had the bodybuilder's life. And to be able to look back to that golden era, the 60s coming up, when before anybody was anybody, and know that you were in that mix and part of that whole story, it's still got to be a good feeling.
You know, it's great to know that Arnold still takes phone calls from these guys too, the yeah. ones that he trained with back in the day. And obviously Arnold must have had some kind of a special liking for Leon, because after meeting him for one day, he was knocking on Leon's door to train with him. He didn't even know who the guy was, you know. So,
you know, Eddie Giuliani always told me that Arnold used to try to train with the guys that knew that Arnold figured were better than him. Because he would motivate him to keep up, you know. Right. So that's why he trained with the strongest, toughest guys that he thought he could find. And you know, Leon was out there before Franco,
right?
And maybe Arnold, you know, look, this is a new guy. No one's seen him before. He's got huge arms. Let me see what this guy's about.
And he was a freak back then. And yeah. you know, I'm sure Leon, you know, was just one of these genetic freaks that Arnold knew that maybe he could pick up some secrets from. Or
sure. If, I mean, if Joe Gold said, if Joe Gold is willing to give away a free membership, all right. So obviously Leon had something going on.
Can you
then.
Imagine that? Leon was probably the only guy in the history of Gold's Gym to have a lifetime free membership.
Yeah.
You know,
lifetime free membership.
Because he beat some guy that Joe Gold didn't like in the gym, you know, who was running around taking his pants off for people, flexing his legs. So that was a great show. I just want to thank all our guests, Leon Brown, of course, Tony Daugherty, for stopping by. Until next week, remember, with Heavy Muscle Radio, the truth hurts.
Heavy Muscle Radio is a presentation of RxMuscle.com, the truth in bodybuilding. Tune in next week at the same time for another round with Dave Palumbo and John Romano, only on Heavy Muscle Radio.